Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing stock market slumps, financial infidelity, and four-day work weeks.
That's right, buddy. This is our Friday flight. I think most folks here know that we're going to cover a bunch of stories that we found interesting, and we are specifically going to talk about how those stories impact our finances, our personal finances. And we're definitely going to get to talking about the stock market because that's been on everybody's radar this week. But before we get to that,
has it ever?
Yeah. I wanted to mention we're going to do a giveaway. You might remember that earlier this month, Kimiko Love, she joined us here on the show. She's the budget mom, and her new book, My Money, My Way, that we discussed during that interview, it actually comes out here in a few days. And so we are doing a book giveaway where five listeners are going to get a free copy of that book. To enter this giveaway, just head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Leave us a solid review there and then just email us at howtomoneypod@gmail.com. Do that before next Wednesday, February 2nd by midnight, and you will be entered into that book giveaway. And remember, this can be an old review. So basically, you can just resubmit that email. There's a lot of folks who do that where they just pull up that thread where they've emailed us before about a book giveaway.
Send it over again.
And they're just like entering the giveaway again.
Yep.
That's all we are asking of you. And so do that. We'll announce our winners on our next Friday Flight episode next week.
A lot of folks listen on Spotify, and Spotify just opened up the ability recently to rate a podcast. And so
that's
that counts
right,
too. If you rate us on Spotify, we will take that as an entry into this contest.
So and easy.
Good luck, because Kimiko rocks and we're glad to be able to give away some of her books.
Absolutely.
But Matt, on to the subject at hand. Let's get to the Friday flight and let's talk about the stories we found interesting, how they apply to our personal finances. And let's start by talking about the stock market.
Okay, good. Let's do it.
it's like top of mind. It's like the news of the week. And the stock market has been on a wild ride this week in particular. But even
it's
more than that,
it's currently on
this
a
year,
wild ride as we are recording this episode.
Yes.
We were just looking at it. It's all over the place.
Exactly. It's all over the map. On Monday, the S&P 500 was down 4%, but then it rallied up to close up on the day, which was surprising. Tuesday saw something very similar. Wednesday was kind of the opposite. It was up and then down. And so we don't want to recap the week's events like a CNBC talking head, because that's not how we roll. Trying to pinpoint the cause for the volatility and, you know, pinning it on the Fed decision or inflation or the new numbers that came out from wherever they are.
It is all of the above.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. There are a lot of things impacting kind of what's happening in the stock market. But we did want to mention this because How to Money listeners, like if you're kind of paying attention to financial news, you're going to see tweets, you're going to see headlines, and you're going to say, what does this mean for me? How should I be reacting? We want you to remember the gyrations in the market, even crazy weeks or even a crazy month like we've had in the stock market so far. These short-term moves don't impact you in any meaningful way if you're investing for the long term.
That's right. We are asking you to step back away from the ledge.
Can you sing it like Jumper?
So what this means to almost everyone is that no changes are needed when it comes to how you are investing. We want you to stay the course, stick to your plan. On this note, crypto, like it's been on more of an extended wild ride. The value of Bitcoin, it's been cut in half since November of last year. And there's been a lot of volatility in that space lately as well. If you zoom out, the rise in the price of Bitcoin, it still has been incredible, right? But this is why you keep your crypto allocation in check, because if you have too high of a percentage of your investments in the cryptocurrency space, you're probably getting pretty nervous right now. And so if you're a little skittish, perhaps, that means that you probably should be trimming your exposure to crypto. This is going to help you to not only diversify your portfolio, it'll also allow you to possibly sleep a little better at night. I know that it might be difficult to think that, a portfolio allocation right now, it doesn't necessarily seem like something you want to do. And to be honest, we're not asking you to time the market right now. What we're trying to ask you to do is to completely ignore what the market is doing and for you to get back on track with whatever your investing plan is. It just happens to be that right now, it's pretty volatile right now. And so I think that's going to make it even more difficult. But a lot of times, we don't know how we're going to respond to our portfolio taking a dip until we are faced with some of these situations.
Yeah. It's been said that the best investment strategy is the one that you can live with, is the one that allows you to sleep at night and not worry. And so if you find yourself worrying as we're experiencing a 10, 12% drop in the S&P, or if you're finding yourself worrying, experiencing a 50% drop in the price of Bitcoin or Ether or whatever coins you're holding, you need to change your strategy, because your strategy needs to allow you to stay the course even when things are going haywire. And Matt, while we're talking about investing, let's give an update on socially responsible investing.
Yeah.
The Wall Street Journal has kind of done like an interesting series on it this week. And writer James McIntosh, he basically said in one of those articles that it's a complete waste of time. And so...
Mostly a waste of time.
Yes. Yeah. And so those are fighting words, I would say, for anyone who's a proponent of investing their money in specific sectors or specific companies that align with their values. But you and I, we kind of tend to agree with him, and we've never had great things to say about ESG investing
ourselves.
Not
our favorite thing.
Yeah. So ESG, socially responsible, those terms kind of get lumped together. ESG stands for environmental social governance. And so basically the idea is that you're investing in companies that do a great job in all three of those areas. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that we're against companies doing good things. I think sometimes when people hear
Why wouldn't you invest in ESG funds? Do you not want to live in a world that's less polluted, Jordan?
Right, yeah. Do you love global warming or something? No, it's quite the opposite, in fact. It's just that these funds come with higher fees, and there's no clear standard by which companies are considered to be socially conscious, right? So one person's gold standard might make another person's naughty list. And so we would say invest in socially responsible or ESG funds if you'd like to, but do your due diligence to make sure that your money is flowing where you want it to be going, that you're not just taking the fund name as gospel truth and patting yourself on the back, feeling better because you did the socially responsible thing. And so realize also that you're likely to generate potentially less returns if you go that route as well, in large part because of the higher fees that come alongside these funds.
That's right. One of the other interesting things that he mentioned too is that a lot of these funds may not actually have the impact that people think they do. Not because the dollars aren't going towards the companies that they would like them to go towards, but basically that if your ESG fund doesn't say, invest in a company that might be considered a quote unquote dirty company, well, that doesn't mean that somebody else isn't going to, buy shares in that company. Mm-hmm. There will be an index fund that does include that company, or there will be individual investors who decide to invest solely in that company. And so in this way, it is difficult to make lasting changes and positive impacts without, somehow snapping your finger and magically changing the mind of everybody at the same time. That's what's so difficult.
And that's not to say that the actions that we take as everyday consumers and in our lives to make choices that are good for the environment or good for our communities are not impactful, because I think those are. I think the small choices that we make, whether it's to drive fewer cars, whether it's to eat less meat, right? Those are things which I don't eat less meat. I probably should. But those are the kind of things that I think you can make a choice with your dollars, with how you spend them, but with how you invest them, I think the impact is minimal to non-existent.
That's right. That is what Mr. McIntosh was arguing there. Let's shift gears for a second. Something that everybody loves, 3-day weekends.
Oh yeah.
And so a question though, what if you could always have a 3-day weekend?
Oh, that sounds nice.
There are a lot of companies now, or a few at least, who are starting to offer a 4-day work week. The number of companies who are doing this is on the rise. And at the same time, I don't want to oversell what's happening, because just because a few companies are doing this, I wouldn't expect your employer out there maybe to transition to fewer work hours next week. But this trend does seem to have some staying power. Kickstarter, Panasonic, they are both companies that are leading the way towards a shorter work week. And a new study actually shows that most folks, they prefer a flexible work schedule even over being able to work from home. But here's the thing, you don't have to go and work for one of these, these few companies who are making this pivot. You can petition your company to make your hours a little bit more flexible. You might even be able to ask for, Fridays or another day if you prefer off altogether. Bottom line, you never know what is possible if you don't ask. And so we wanted just to put that on your radar. You might want to do a little bit of research, maybe bring in some stats to that conversation. But most companies that have made the switch have seen greater levels of employee happiness and productivity at the same time. We'll make sure to link to some of those stories and some of these studies if you are trying to make a case at your employer.
Yes, exactly. No, there are a bunch. And actually, you know, one study we could link to, Matt, in our show notes is what's been happening in Iceland. A lot of companies have been going that direction, specifically in Iceland. I think it was kind of a national effort to push companies to 32-hour weeks. And, you know, I don't necessarily think we need federal legislation, kind of like the Iceland government. And, you know, the USA, we kind of function differently than some of those
Definitely.
European countries.
Yeah.
Although I actually do think legislation was recently introduced that would push us in this direction. But another consideration is not just where you work, but Matt, we've talked about this. The pandemic has created a lot of people starting their own business, a lot of solopreneurs. And if you're one of those people, if you have started your own business, well, just realize you don't have to work 5 days a week and take 2 weeks of vacation. That is kind of the stock American way is to basically work 50 weeks out of the year and to work 5 days a week. But now you're in charge. And so you get to make the rules. And you might say, you know what? My work week is going to be 32 hours a week or 35 hours a week, and I'm going to take 4 or 5 weeks of vacation. That's the cool thing about working for yourself. Matt, you and I, we've instituted a 4.5-day work week here at Out of Money, half-day Fridays, which is always nice. Like in the morning, if I need to go get the oil changed or
company policies here.
Yeah, run some errands, whatever it is. Friday is kind of the time where we're able to take care of some of those tasks so that we can still kind of keep our weekends a little more free for family stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Reading about these trends, though, maybe it'll make us consider cutting back even more.
Hey, I'm for it.
Just taking Fridays off altogether.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I like the idea, too. Like, I've talked to you before about my desire to, like, do more, like, hands-on home renovation work.
Yeah.
And so I recently actually brought that up to Kate. I'm just like, hey, all right, like, just think, what would it look like if we were doing a live-in flip? And she promptly shut that down. She's like, I don't even want to talk about that.
That sounds awful.
Yeah.
There's this law. Have you heard of Parkinson's Law, Matt?
Yeah, that's like the fishbowl, fish that fills the fishbowl rule, right?
Right, yes, exactly. It states essentially that work expands to fill the time available for its completion.
Right, yeah.
So there is something to it, like where the tasks we have to do, we'll get them done quicker if we have to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, meaningful, productive work is an important part of human existence. We fully believe that. But it's also important to be well-rounded. Actively working towards fewer but more impactful hours of work, I would say that's a good goal for folks to be striving for. And so whether you work 9 to 5 for somebody else, whether you are doing your own thing, it's not that we want you to be lazy, but we would love for you to actually be at your desk for fewer mm-hmm. hours and have those hours that you're there be more productive.
Totally, man. I liked as well how you mentioned Iceland and specifically how it's kind of like it's not the American way.
Yeah.
Because I do think that the countries who are mandating this, right, who are making it law, I don't like that as much as I like individual companies being able to make the decision to,
sure.
to say, all right, this is something that our employees, they're wanting. Let's give it a shot. Because like here in America, just think about all the entrepreneurship, the ingenuity, the progress, like the technology and like medical progress we've made because of the ability just to work really hard.
Or like, progress with rockets. Look at the way the people at SpaceX work.
Yeah, Tesla, like
80, 90 hour weeks.
Tesla, Rivian, yeah. Like these companies exist here in the United States. I'm thinking about like the vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna,
mm-hmm.
Johnson & Johnson. These are all American companies. And I think if we were to say, okay, you know, you are not allowed to work beyond a certain amount of time, I think that could really stifle. I think it could stymie the progress and just all of the awesome things that we're able to do here in the U.S.
Yeah.
So I like that it's an option. I want it to be an option for companies. I want it to be something where more employees are asking for it so they can try it out. But I don't like the idea of it being kind of like a across the board thing that is required.
Agreed. Think if that was federal law and, you know, folks at Pfizer who are working on this.
Could you imagine?
Glorious miracle
oh
of a vaccine. And they're like, it takes them 8-9 months longer just because of that regulation.
Yep.
That could certainly slow innovation and growth down in some ways. But for those of us who are pursuing financial independence, who are good with our money, who have saved well and invested well, and who don't want to work 50 hours a week, I think it's a good goal to work less. And I think mm-hmm. there are ways that you can implement that into your life. Not in every situation, but a lot of people can figure out a way to do that.
Totally.
And yeah, the workforce is, I think, responding in large part to the way millennials and Gen Z want to work. And I think that's kind of cool to see. But all right, Matt, we got more stories to get to, including one about cheaper cell phones and cheaper prescription drugs. We'll get to both of those and more right after this break.
back. Yeah, and in the world of inflation, there are a few things that are more affordable these days. But before we get to the stories, Joel, that you hinted at, let's get to our ludicrous headline of the week. And this one reads, 32% of coupled U.S. adults have cheated on their partners financially.
Ooh.
This one comes to us from a survey by creditcards.com. This is not good.
No, it's not.
It showed that roughly half of Gen Z and millennial relationships struggle with this, where there has been some financial cheating going on. And the truth is that financial infidelity can tank your relationship quickly.
It can break the trust in an instant.
Yeah, so let's quickly define it. Financial infidelity, it can be a number of things, right? It could be spending more than your partner would be okay with and then hiding it. It could mean having a credit card that your partner doesn't know about, maybe even keeping a stash of money, of savings, investments, whatever, that you keep a secret.
Your partner doesn't know you're a millionaire secretly.
that would be kind of crappy.
Yep.
It's okay though to not tell your brand new boyfriend or girlfriend how much you have in your 401k. But
first date, breaking out the budget and the spreadsheets.
Yeah, but if you are in a long-term committed relationship, I think hiding these things from your partner can be seen as a betrayal, and it can have these negative implications on your relationship moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. Just to clarify, you don't have to print out those account balances and show somebody your Vanguard account on your smartphone on the second date. Like, that would be not what we're pushing for. That's just weird.
Yeah, plus you're just basically broadcasting your nerd status. You're just like wearing it on your sleeve if that's what you're doing during your date.
Look at my Jack Bogle tattoo, too, on my bicep.
No, that's probably not what you want to do.
Right, yeah. But we would say it is okay to have separate accounts if that's what works best for your relationship situation, just not hidden accounts, right? And so honesty really is the best policy because according to this poll, Matt, most folks view financial infidelity on the same exact level as physically being cheated on, which I found that fascinating because
it's crazy.
I think of them as pretty similar, other people view it the same way too. You don't want to be pulling in the opposite direction as your significant other. And if you are committing financial infidelity, that's exactly what you're doing. And so if this is a relationship that you're committed to, laying your cards on the table enables you to better plan for the future that you envision having together. But Matt, that's kind of sad to see that a third of overall people are doing this. But then when we're looking at our cohort, millennials and then younger Gen Z, it's like they're doing it in droves. More than half of them are hiding things from their significant other. And it's just unhealthy.
Right. Well, I think what's key is that if you are in what you said is so true. If you are in a committed relationship, and I think honestly, that is the big problem, is like it kind of aligns with what we see when it comes to folks who are married and not married, right? Because if you're committed, then yes, these are conversations you need to have. But if you're, you might be in a relationship, but if you're not totally sure if it's long term or not, maybe there are separate accounts that folks don't know about. And obviously, the younger you get, when you move from millennials down to Gen Z, there are going to be fewer folks who are married or who are in a long-term committed relationship.
That's a good point. That's probably has something to do with these numbers.
Right. And so, but that being said, it is still a great practice, though, that if you are either married or if you've had just a serious talk where you are in this for the long haul, you need to make sure that you're being transparent. You need to make sure that you're sharing with each other.
Yep. Totally. All right. So should we talk about cheap phones for a second?
Let's do it.
All right. There was this really cool CNET story, and it basically was saying that the cheapest phones out there are getting way better. And so for guys like us who like to spend less money on gadgets, that was music to our ears. We're obviously not tech experts. Like if you want to hear a tech expert's opinion of what cell phone is the best one to get, you want to go to like MKBHD on YouTube or whatever. That guy knows what he's talking about. But we've kind of been seeing this in the cell phone space in recent years. Google and Apple both have released these like solid mid-tier phones, in the last couple of years. I'm still rolling with the Pixel 4a, which is a $350 phone, and it's solid. I like it. And Samsung just announced a new cheaper phone called the Galaxy S21 FE, which is
it's a great name. great naming convention. Samsung.
Why the FE? Yeah, I know. I don't get it. But it's $700 and it has some triple lens camera, which Matt, I'm sure you would probably dig.
Well, that's actually a really great price point for a phone that has the triple lenses, right? So to be able to have a phone in that in that range that has the wide, the regular, and then the telephoto.
Yeah.
I mean that's really appealing to someone like me.
That's not like over $1,000 because most of them are.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you can go with even more affordable phones, right? You don't have to go all the way up to $700. The Nokia G400 is a new 5G phone that costs only $239.
Which is amazing.
I wonder if you can play Snake on it like we used to on our Nokia phone.
It's a real touchscreen phone. It's just crazy affordable.
Yeah. I know. That's a really good price point. And so I feel like this is just a good reminder that you don't have to shell out just a grand or more for a phone with three lenses because there's a $700 option.
Yep.
And you don't even need to spend $500 for a phone with 5G. There are solid options in that $350 range or even less, even under $250. And so you can find a really good phone. You're going to make some compromises, but it's not like you're going from like a Tesla to a jalopy. It's more like
a Toyota Corolla. Like, it gets the job done, not super flashy, but it's still a really solid car.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe it's even better than a Corolla. I'm sure that Samsung is definitely better
than a
Corolla.
Yeah. Right?
But the Nokia might be Corolla level.
Yeah, maybe like an electric Corolla.
Chevy Bolt.
But like you said, I do think this is a good wake-up call. Essentially, if you have just been in the mindset of, oh, all the good phones cost $1,000. That's just what I'm going to have to spend. And you're only looking at Apple phones or Google phones. There are a lot of different options out there. And sometimes it takes being confronted with the information like this and being jarred loose from your way of thinking to know that I can actually save a good chunk of money by going with a different phone than I've gone with in the past.
Yeah, and to be honest, Matt, you know, I have a fairly cheap phone. You have a pretty expensive phone.
I got a nice one.
We're not judging people on their phone choices, but I think the biggest thing to save money on a phone is to use it longer. And if just avoid the upgrade cycle, that's going to be probably even more important to get the phone you want and then hold on to it for 3+ years.
And making sure that you get that affordable cell phone coverage too. Got to get that Mint Mobile.
That's right. Exactly.
We're obviously big fans of that. Another little phone story here. If you do decide to upgrade to one of those fancier yet inexpensive phones, make sure to sell your old phone to make some money. Don't just stick it in a drawer. Actually list it on Facebook Marketplace. Get whatever value out of it that you can. But here's another option. If your old phone isn't worth anything, it turns out that you can use your old phone as a security camera. Fast Company had this article describing how you can use this app called Alfred Camera to turn an old cell phone into like a baby monitor, like maybe a camera to watch out for packages when they arrive, whatever you might need an extra set of eyes for. It looks pretty cool. It works both with iOS and Android. So we'll make sure to link to that app in our show notes.
All right, Alfred Camera.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
My daughter has like a little knit mouse and she calls it Alfred. So,
oh really?
Yeah. Think of that.
Where'd she get that name?
I don't know. That's a good question. But she's been taking him around everywhere for like the last few days.
It's a very proper old school name.
It is.
It's Alfred.
An old British gentleman or something.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, speaking of phones, we came across a pretty silly story of a toddler who bought around $2,000 worth of furniture on his mom's phone. And yeah, she had put
literally a toddler did this.
Right. Yeah. I don't even know. I think he was 22 months old.
Yeah, he's like 2 years old.
Yeah. And so she put a bunch of items in her cart, like you do, right? And you're just like not checking out. You're thinking about it. But then she didn't actually make that purchase. And so the two-year-old managed to get on the phone, and he completed the order for her, which...
Don't worry, Mom. I got that.
And so they didn't even realize this had happened until all the boxes and boxes of stuff showed up at their house. And so... I don't know. I thought, you know, one other lesson while we're talking about smartphones is maybe make sure we have a proper passcode set up on our phones.
Yes.
Or the fingerprint sensor, like, unlock, right? So that your toddler can't log into your Walmart account and buy a bunch of stuff. And even just from a security standpoint, right? Someone can get a hold of your phone. And think about all the stuff that's on our phone these days, Matt. And there's Google Pay. My credit cards are on my smartphone, and you can buy stuff with them, or you can transfer money from my bank account or from my Cash App or Venmo. And so, yeah, you want to make sure that your phone is locked down, that you have enabled those login procedures so that someone can't snag your phone and in an instant rob you blind.
Which also, like another thing, it makes me think of the auto lock. And so on your phone, Joel, when you unlock it, how long does it stay on or whatever before it like locks back down automatically?
I don't know. Three seconds, maybe? 6 seconds?
Oh, really?
Maybe.
Oh, crazy. Okay, so on Apple phones, you can set it to like 30 seconds, 1 minute, like 2, 3, 4, 5, or like never.
Okay.
And I think another thing to consider is you probably want to make sure that your phone is on auto lock after 30 seconds or 1 minute. I think 1 minute is like the default.
Okay. But maybe I'm wrong then. I don't know what mine is.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know how these Android phones work. But so many times when I unlock my phone to do something real quick, I just set it down and I don't lock it. I let it auto lock because I don't know. I just figure I don't want to push the button. It like wears out the button. I don't know if anybody else thinks that
is
way.
That true?
I think that way. Okay. Like if you push it every single time to relock it rather than just let it automatically lock via the software. Anyway, that's what I do. I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one out there. But if your phone is set to like 2 minutes or 3 minutes where it's just sitting there unlocked, and somebody gets a hold of your phone, well, you're sorry out of luck. And yeah. so I think that's just another thing to keep in mind as well. Maybe consider taking your phone off of 5 minutes. I don't know if anybody out there has their phone set to never lock. Right. If it's just sitting there and it's just on.
Like, probably not, right?
Who does that?
Well, so I will say, if I see somebody's phone that's like that, I will take goofy selfies of myself. That's the worst thing I'm going to do to your phone if I'm around it. But other people might do worse.
Yeah, other folks might have more nefarious intentions in mind.
That's right. All right, well, let's talk about, we talked about cheap phones. Let's talk about cheap prescription drugs.
Cheap meds.
Yeah, high-profile billionaire and entrepreneur Mark Cuban, and a potentially future president, I guess. He wants to run for president at some point.
I hadn't read that.
He's making generic drugs more affordable. That is a winning campaign item, I would say. But his site, costplusdrugs.com, it launched earlier this week, and its goal is to provide more transparency in a space that has obviously not had much transparency over the years. And you know, they're kind of actually going with the Costco business model, Matt, of charging the cost plus 15%. And if you don't know how Costco does things, it's basically that's basically how they roll.
That's their formula.
Yeah, they don't mark anything up over more than 15%. And so more competition in the prescription drug space is a good thing for all of us. So next time you're shopping for a prescription, we would say stop by Cost Plus Drugs to see if that can save you money. And don't forget about Good RX too. That's one of our favorites that's been around for a while. And you can just like literally pull it up on your phone, show it to the pharmacist while you're getting your drugs, and you can often save a bundle. That's one of the best sites and apps, I think, to save. But this Cost Plus Drugs is going to be just adding more competition into the space, in a space that has really been sorely lacking for that competition.
That's right. And the more competition there is, the better it is for us consumers. And you know, everyone knows it's going to cost a lot more to buy a car right now, specifically $6,800 more, which is actually equivalent to roughly 5 weeks of salary. A recent story talked about that. And we're going to talk more about buying a car the right way. We're going to do that next week. But until then, we want you to have a great weekend. Don't forget to enter the book giveaway for Kimiko's book. All you got to do is leave that review on Apple Podcasts or give us that rating on Spotify. Send us an email letting us know that you did and you are entered into that giveaway.
That's right. It's howtomoneypod@gmail.com. Shoot it over. We'll get you entered into the contest.
That's right.
All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.